Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Second Setting the Record Straight. This is Brenda K. Sanders, your program host, coming back to talk to you today. And I'm glad that you've joined into the program. I certainly don't take it for granted. Someone wants to know, and someone should know. I have designed this program where I want to tell the truth about what I know, just using my expertise as an attorney and judge for 30 years, over 30 years now, I would like to just, do some of what I don't see the main media outlets doing. First of all, to tell the truth about these various situations, especially when it involves police brutality, the failing to charge a certain defendant and why, the failure to charge officers and why, and so forth, and even reporting on prosecutorial misconduct, which is rampant in this country. And what we need to know is that shining a bright light on these situations is the key to uncovering the truth and also procuring justice in most of these cases where, to me, factually, it should be a given. However, when there are efforts to maneuver out of doing justice to save someone's career or future, that is when we should be on guard. And, in fact, all the time, because it happens so much. As a judge, I was the watchdog trying to, look over cases that came into my court, whether their attorneys did their job or not. I did not sit idly by and watch attorneys virtually commit malpractice before the court. And I often found myself scolding. I wanted to say something else. Scolding attorneys, I might not say what, but I often found myself advising or admonishing attorneys to do their job. Sometimes I would say what it was, and sometimes I would not. But we certainly need attorneys that are up to the task of covering all of the aspects of a case, all of the facets of a case, and not just leave it out there. I had that situation many, many times. But that's not what I want to talk about. One of the cases that I want to talk about, and like I said, if we have the resources, or we can put together the resources to review criminal cases with this on this level, with this magnitude of importance, then we can. That's half the battle. I always told litigants in my courtroom that the battle is already half won if the rules are followed. Just if the rules are followed. Many of the cases that I dismissed for lack of evidence, or maybe every case, I was particularly concerned that the law be followed. Every I be dotted and every T be crossed. And with that, I said that the defendants, any defendant in my courtroom could get a fair trial because the law was in their favor. The problem is applying the law that's already been written. And the other thing is getting judges to apply the law. The law is already in their favor. If you look at the Constitution, I used to quote the Constitution in my rulings and even as an attorney, and it was almost laughed at, considered to be laughable. Well, if we employ all of these laws that are already on the books and we can secure justice, or an attorney can secure justice for any defendant. Because I believe the law is very fair in most areas. Very, very fair. Well, today I want to look at this Baltimore case again. It's a case of Freddie Gray. I was reading a couple of, I believe it was an Associated Press article, and it looks like the judge there did the right thing today. That's refreshing. But again, this is not a closet case. There's a lot of media coverage on this case. And this judge is probably an elected judge that may face a re-election opportunity in the future. And so everyone is paying attention. And that's what happens when everyone is paying attention. There is justice. Now, what happened today, this judge did the right thing. He admitted all of the statements of these officers. My guess is that they did probably point fingers at each other. The main defendant, the one driving the van, apparently did not make a statement. That's his right constitutionally. That's the Fifth Amendment right to not incriminate himself. That only put more pressure on the other defendant to tell something about the event. And I suspect those statements that were procured by, I don't know, the police investigators, internal affairs, are going to point fingers at this main police officer that was driving this van. I looked at the charges that they outlined in the article, and just the nature of the charges suggests to me that there was something very, very wrong going on with the actions of these officers on this day. I see a charge of second-degree depraved heart murder. My goodness. And that is, I believe, attributed to the van driver officer. The only thing I can say about that with a depraved heart murder, evidence is going to be coming out that this person was just out to kill this man, out to maybe saw his suffering and intentionally, deliberately, willfully ignored it or contributed even more to it. And sounds kind of really vile here. Whatever happened, this officer clearly did little or nothing, absolutely nothing, to assist this person in the van. If Freddie Gray was already injured, he only contributed to his injuries and exacerbated the whole situation. And I believe there's going to be evidence that he intentionally did so. Depraved heart murder? That's somebody that would shoot their own children, you know, that kind of level of malice would be involved. I do see a charge of involuntary manslaughter. Someone was also present with this officer that drove the van. I believe it was Officer Gordon. Someone else was there. And that's why I'm still perplexed as to why an aiding and abetting charge was not considered, which would hold all these officers responsible the same as the lead driver of the van. The other charge was a negligent assault. Okay, that's someone else that saw what was going on, hit the person, maybe didn't know he was dead already, or didn't know he was ill, something like that. Manslaughter by vehicle, gross negligence. That suggests to me that someone did some very, very intentional things. Maybe it was not strapping him in the van correctly, and just negligently, just maybe riding all the way to the police station, wherever it was, and just didn't bother to do the right thing. Knew what to do and did not do it. Gross negligence. It's more than ordinary negligence. It's just almost an intentional mistake, if there is such a thing. I see negligent assault, and I see criminal assault. Again, driving a vehicle, criminal negligence. Something arising out of just making a mistake. I would guess that they knew Freddie Gray was. There was some indication that he was injured. I don't know if they're going to admit to beating them. Maybe somebody's going to say they beat them. They were standing right there, all of them, and did nothing to secure his preserve his safety. That's why they should have been charged as aiders and abettors, and that didn't happen. However, the statements are probably going to contradict each other, and therefore this judge. Well, the premise of when you have a motion to suppress statements is usually based on quite a criteria like this. You know, I was forced to make this statement. Or if you were a defendant, like in normal cases, these were police officers. I was denied food. I was denied water. I was coerced into making these statements. I didn't know what I was doing. I had been beaten. I was in custody 12 hours, 24 hours, and I was tired. I was weary, and there was duress involved. Those are kind of the criteria which you look for when you have a motion to suppress. I have had maybe one statement suppressed in my whole career as an attorney, and I'm going to say I think based on the criteria, I can't remember suppressing statements in any of the cases I've presided over as a judge. I believe let me tell you why. Because these sessions where you're questioning defendants, you know, facts and asking to sign a statement, they're very rarely recorded. And I think that is something that should be done. It should regularly be recorded and videotaped. How easy is it now these days to do so that you, whoever it is, can make a very clear and accurate record as to whether the defendant appears as though they're under duress. I know Officer White indicated she thought it was in her Bill of Rights as an officer, but nothing can contravene the United States Constitution. A Fifth Amendment right to remain silent is just that, and it supersedes all other rights or laws. That's an absolute right that she had as a police officer, and she's a trained officer. They, again, are trained in these types of things in their academy, in their training manuals, and so the judge did the right thing. He really did. He ignored or disregarded her claims of being under duress in the situation. Even though, and I promise always to tell the truth here on this program, she may have been under more pressure to give a statement because of the van did not give a statement. And so it was probably a little bit more pressure on her because the lead driver, the one that probably was most culpable, did not talk, and so they wanted to get it out of someone else what actually transpired. So her claims may have some validity. However, the judge rejected her claims because it's kind of a high bar to meet, a high burden to meet. And she being a trained officer, a officer that, you know, regularly deals with these situations, may have really had too much knowledge to not know what to do in that situation. They're also charged with misconduct in office and reckless endangerment. There's nothing barring, by the way, and I've had it done in trial, and even at the preliminary exam level as a judge, where parties ask, based on the evidence and the testimony at a preliminary exam hearing, to add charges. So it could very well be that if the evidence shows aiding and abetting, that the prosecutor, her name was Mosby, could ask for a charge of aiding and abetting, which may afford a charge of the same charges for all of the officers involved in this case if they aided each other in any way, like the Suge Knight and Cat Williams case I was trying to get to today, where cameras were stolen, a photographer's camera was stolen. It wasn't Suge Knight himself. It wasn't Cat Williams himself, but it was someone that knew them who took the camera, and they have charged in Los Angeles County Prosecutor's Office, have charged them with robbery, one kind of robbery each, because of they're saying aiding and abetting, and they weren't even at the scene. They were connected in some way to the individual. So there could be, in this Baltimore trial, if the evidence supports it, additional charges when the trial comes up. They're certainly not barred from adding charges if it shows that these officers acted in concert with this depraved heart murder. It could very well show it in trial. So the prosecutor's not barred from asking for even more serious charges for the other officers. Well, thanks again for listening to the program. It's definitely my intent to just inform anyone wants to know. Sometimes maybe even the news outlets don't have time to cover all of the details of the case. And certainly someone with a legal background can clarify and bring and add and augment the importance, the legal significance of the facts that you're hearing in a case. Thank you again. You may go to blogtalkradio.com/SettingTheRecordStraight2015. If you want to listen to this episode or any other episode on the show page, you may email me at bks1233@outlook.com. If you have a question, a comment, a criticism, a response, please feel free to email me at that address, and I will respond to your concerns. Well, have a blessed evening. Thank you for listening, and talk to you next time on Setting the Record Straight.